Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast. This is episode 23. We have a lot of voices here today.
Yes.
We have Voice of Culture. They are also a podcast, and they will introduce themselves, I guess, after our check-in and after our little this or that. But we have Kelly, Carolyn, Michelle, and Amy. Do you guys want to say your name and your voice so people know who's talking?
Yes, of course. So, hi, my name is Kelly. I will be an incoming freshman at USC, and I'm so excited to be here today, and I feel really great.
Hi, Michelle. I'm the graphic designer for Voice to Culture, and I'm currently an incoming freshman for UCSC.
Hi, my name is Carolyn. I'm the editor-in-chief for Voice to Culture, and I will be an incoming freshman at Mission College.
And I'm Amy. I'm the social media manager for Voice of Culture, and I will be an upcoming freshman at San Jose State University. And I'm so excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you all. We have so many voices today. It's a big party.
I know. Okay, let's do a quick check-in. Since we have so many people, we'll just do like a short how you're feeling kind of check-in, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go first. I'm feeling really excited about this, but at the same time, I'm also like kind of tired because I had like a triple date yesterday, and then we like had a whole day of activities, and I'm like a little bit tired right now, but y'all get me really excited.
Summer was in San Jose.
I know. I went to round one.
Oh my gosh, the one in Eastridge? Is it that one?
Yes.
Oh my god!
Look what I want. Look.
That's so cute.
What was your favorite game for round one?
Oh, air hockey.
Oh,
I love those.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
But I was also pretty excited to be here today. Like, it's not like every day that you get to interview Made in Hong Kong. So yeah. It's been really nice, like, listening to, like, being able to interview you and listening to your responses. So, yeah, I'm excited to also be interviewed today.
Yes.
Same here. I am, like, very excited to be here and be able to sit down and talk to you guys. I will say I am a little bit tired because last night, my family and I, we had hot pot. And so we were kind of just all sitting around having good food, enjoying our time, and it was very fun.
I love hot pie.
Yeah, I'm also feeling a bit excited, and I feel a little better than, like, last night. You know, I had, like, a little headache, but it's, like, it's gone now, so, like, I'm, like, energetic now.
Yeah, I'm also excited, too. This is, I think, our first time, like, with, like, an actual, like, sit-down interview with, like somebody's interviewing us, so it's pretty exciting. And we loved your having you on our podcast as well. You guys added like a lot to our conversation, and yeah, I'm just excited.
Aww, I am also excited. And I feel like really good and energized today. I watched Shang-Chi last night,
yeah,
and it was so good. And I'm crying because Simu Liu is so hot. Okay.
Oh my god, Crystal.
With that, I know, I was talking to my friends about it last night, and we were like, why did he only take off his shirt once? We need more Simu Liu abs. Okay, anyways, with that, let's go on to our this or that.
So this week, we're going to do, like, Asian dessert. Our this week this or that is bingsu versus taiyaki. Which one do y'all like more?
I'm going to say bingsu because it is so good, and I feel like I'm always craving it.
What flavor?
Injeolmi. It's like the rice cake thing. It's like red bean, and yeah.
That one's so good.
I'd have to go with taiyaki. I tried it like this year, and oh my god, let me tell you guys. It's really, really good. It's really good. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, I pick taiyaki too. You can go ahead,
maybe. I'm just gonna say that, like, Carolyn and Michelle, they picked the right option. Okay, like, I don't know why, but it's just, why is taiyaki so good? Like, you can have like different paste flavors, and then like you know, like this like ice cream chain called Somi Somi, you could put ice cream with taiyaki and it's so good. Like, yes, there's so much variety, and yes, and it's cute, it's like a fish, so
I love the enthusiasm. Yeah, I like taiyaki too. I think I just like bingsu is it's a lot, and I like don't really like ice cream that much, so taiyaki is good, and it's like not too sweet, so I like it. And Somi Somi is also really good.
Oh wow, I'm with Kelly on this. I like bingsu.
Damn,
taiyaki is good, but then I really like bingsu too. Like, no, like you're talking about variety, right? But there are also a lot of variety with with bingsu, and my favorite flavor is probably mango sticky rice. Like, you also have the mango and like sticky rice on the side with like the coconut condensed milk, something like that. Oh, that one is so good. And you, if you ever come to San Francisco, U Dessert is the place to go. But until you try U Dessert, Amy, maybe you'll change your mind.
Call her out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But yes. Yeah. Also, like, I just want to know how you all met each other and how you started the podcast too.
Yeah, we kind of like just we met each other through school, since like we all go to like the same high school. We kind of met each other at like different times, but like with me, I was sort of friends with Michelle like since middle school already. So I kind of heard from middle school, and then with Kelly, we had band together, and like we would like bond over sectionals and like football games, because we had to go every fall, and like we just bond over that. And with Amy, I had several classes with her, and she was cool and she was quirky, and yeah, we kind of just Kelly brought the idea to life, actually. She came up with the idea, and then she invited everyone, and then we were all down, and yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
Oh, y'all are so wholesome.
Thank you. Yeah, so like Carolyn said, I kind of had the idea back in January of last year, I believe, because I knew that I always wanted to like talk about issues that I felt was going on, especially when we had Socratic seminars going on in class. I really liked those discussions, and I wanted to bring that within my community. And then when COVID hit, we kind of had so much free time that I was actually able to start on it. And seeing all these injustices pile up like one after another, it was like, okay, this is exactly what we need to center all these resources and everything we want other people to learn. So the concept of voice culture is we're educating the modern day key citizens. So we're teaching people how to, you know, get involved and understand what's happening around them, how to stay informed and not feel like they're left out, or that this doesn't belong, or this doesn't pertain to them, because everyone does have a role, and we were trying to show people.
Wait, what was the class that you said you had at school?
Socratic seminars.
Oh, so Socratic.
We had that a lot in our AP World History class. That's how it kind of got started.
Oh, is that where you like talk about social issues in class? That's so cool that you guys had that. Well, with the schooling, I guess we can jump right into our discussion. So you all grew up in San Jose? So I know that the Bay is a very competitive area, especially in San Jose too. So how was it like growing up and going to high school in San Jose, and like in terms of competitiveness? And I know it's a lot of Asian Americans in San Jose too. So did you ever feel like teachers or peers who were not Asian American had higher expectations towards you? Also, like, in your home life, like, with your parents and stuff, like, how was that?
Well, personally, I didn't grow up in the Bay Area, but I did move into the, like, I've been around the Bay Area my whole life, because I had family living in the Bay Area, and I had, like, Girl Scouts and extracurriculars, so I think I've been, like, I could say, like, confidently that I've been exposed to, like, the culture, but I think it was interesting, because I would have, like, my hometown like environment, and I would also have like the Bay Area environment. And like one thing I will say is that like it was quite drastically different, because in my hometown I felt like there wasn't a lot of Asian representation. Like, I felt like I was, like, kind of the only Vietnamese individual in, like, my entire class. And in comparison, in the Bay Area, there are, like, when I would go to Girl Scouts, it would only be Asians, and I would, like, feel very, like, represented, and, like, I would have, it would be easy to, like, talk to, like, my peers about, like, oh, like our favorite food and, like our families and stuff. Growing up, so, like, as a student, I would say, like, once I moved to San Jose was when I, like, really felt, like, the competitive edge. When I was living in my hometown, I felt pressure from my outside environment to perform as an Asian, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like since I wasn't really, like, represented, a lot of people in my environment were like, oh, like, you know, Amy's Asian, you know, I wonder why she's getting such good grades. And then I felt like that was so unfair, because, like, it might have been partly due to, like, my culture or, like, my family environment. Like, my parents, they were immigrants, so they wanted me to succeed and do well. But also, it's because I worked hard. And then when I moved to San Jose, I felt, like, the competitive environment even more. And, like, it was really the first time that I felt it to that degree. And, like connecting it to, like, our interview about, like, my identity as, like, an Asian American, I really felt, like, the most, like, I was hinging my identity on being Asian American with my grades, if that made sense. Like, I felt like, oh, if I don't get straight A's, then, like, am I really, like, deserving of being Asian? If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so much pressure. And, like, I feel like being a good student and being Asian can coexist and also not be, like, lumped together. So, like, having that, like, growing up is just, that's so much.
I think, well, from my experience, teachers didn't really have, like, higher expectations from me, just because, like, I feel like it's because our high school is, like, mostly, like, Asian, right? So then, I don't know, I feel like there wasn't really, like, that much differentiations with how teachers treat different students of different ethnicities. However, I do think I tend to have higher expectations for myself than I do of other people. And I think that's, like, a part of the reason for that is how I was raised. Like, growing up, I was always, like, told by relatives and, like, family to not just be passing of, like, something at something, but to excel. And that basically goes for everything, not just, like, academics, like, sports, hobbies, and, like, etc. I feel like along the way I've sort of adapted this mindset as well, and I'm not really proud of it, mainly because oftentimes when I fall short of a goal, like, I get really upset with myself. Like, I find myself invalidating my accomplishments a lot and questioning my self-worth because I didn't measure up. So it's been a goal of mine to try to rid myself of this mindset. And although I can't say I've accomplished it yet, I've definitely made progress, and that thought alone makes me proud.
Yeah. We're proud of you. See what you're doing right now. Yeah. So from what I'm hearing from you all, and also, like, a lot of the Asian Americans around me, I feel like a lot of the times we associate our self-worth to our accomplishment. And with that, like, how do you think the model minority myth has played out in your life, especially now that you're all in college?
Looking back at it right now, I feel like the model minority myth, I feel like it sort of created, like, this kind of boundary between the older generation and the younger generations of my family, you know? Like, when it comes to racism, the older generation of my family tend to not want to, like, involve themselves in it. You know, I understand that, like, in the past, they had to use the myth to protect themselves because, you know, that's all they had. You know, they were seen as the foreigners of the country. So then all they could do was, like, enforce the belief that, like, oh, if you work hard, then they'll see and they'll accept us, you know? And it's really sad to see because, like, they shouldn't be feeling that kind of way in the first place, you know? They shouldn't have to feel like they should have to be any different, and they have to, like, work harder and, like, be better at, like, everything just because, like, we're Asian American, you know? It's just so, like, just so that we won't be seen as less inferior. But, yeah, I feel like it sort of drives, like, this wedge between us. Because then while I try to, like, become more involved in, like, social justice and stuff as the years go by, it feels like they sort of try to, like, dismiss it and try to, like, discourage me from doing it, you know? And, like, when it comes to, like, education, like, yeah, it definitely feels like I have, it feels like I'm being fit into, like, this, like, the stereotype Asian, you know? Oh, I need to be good at math and, like, be good at piano, you know? It's sort of, I feel like it sort of, like, diminishes, like, my own experience as an Asian American.
That's so true, like, everything you were saying. And I feel like, I didn't think about it that way, though, actually, like, how the older generation, like, accepts it, like, accepts that they are the model minority because that's all they had. That's very interesting insight. And that explains a lot of why there's so much division, like, within minorities in its own, too. Like, having that ranking, when we should actually all just be working together. But it's sad. It's sad. Yeah, that it very, very well said. And, like, with that, like, you are all very active in speaking upon social issues as well. So do you talk to your parents about these issues? And, like, how do you start that conversation? Because I've definitely tried more and more as I've grown up. And usually it's just, like, agree to disagree kind of thing. And it's really hard to, like, bring the U.S. rhetoric to my parents to talk about it too and, like, translate, you know, like, social justice terms for them. So, yeah, like, how is the process with that? And, like, how do you usually start conversations if you do and if you don't? Like, why not? Or, like, how has it been hard?
I feel like it's definitely, like, really difficult. I agree with you. I think it's mostly because of, like, you know, the modern minority myth, and also because they're not really, I feel like they're not really aware of the history that's been going on that hasn't been in the perspectives of, like, white people and, like, white supremacy, you know? So I feel like the first step to really take is to educate them about, like, the impacts of, you know, like, slavery and, like, all the horrible things that have happened to, like, indigenous people, you know? And, like, the effects that, like, the systemic, like, racism that still hold, like, effect, you know, today, you know? I think from there, we could really educate them about these kind of things, and then we could, like, build up to correcting their microaggressions and, like, uprooting, like, harmful stereotypes and such that they have, like, against other races. And I think we could just, like, take steps to, like, go forward.
For me, it's personally really hard to talk to my parents in general just because there's one, like, a language barrier because they speak their native language, and I'm expected to speak that and English, like, to the same level, which obviously is, like, very difficult. But also at the same time, it kind of comes down to targeting the little things that they say and not trying to, like, radicalize them, like, all at once. Because sometimes I catch on my parents maybe saying something bad about another race or another group, and I'm like, well, why do you think that way? Like, what makes you think that? I remember when I was learning abroad in Korea, my mother asked me, she was like, well, I bet it was, like, really safe there, right? Because there's no, like, all these people that there are in America. And I was like, no, actually, it's really safe because the people there respect each other. And there's a lot of CCTV cameras to monitor people's behaviors and make sure everyone, you know, treats everyone with respect. And it comes down to culture respect, not because this person is skin color or this person's from this background. And showing them little things like that is going to help them, like, change their mindset a bit and not, you know, fall back on these old stereotypes that were once true or may have been perceived to be true when they were our age.
So true. And it's also, like, challenging them to, like, think about, like, why are they perceived this way? And I feel like it's not something that I learned until college, definitely. So it's such a, even to me, it was such a, like, mind-blowing concept.
Yeah, I think, like, it's always, I think what you brought up about, like, just not radicalizing them, like, right away, like, introducing them to, like, very radical ideas right away, I think that's very important because we have to, like, start that conversation first and, like, challenge them to really put their thoughts into perspective. and then like start a conversation and educate them about the different social justice issue.
Yeah, I also think that's why it's a little harder for, you know, Asian Americans, you know, because we're like growing up, I think we're taught that like we need to respect our elders, we can't challenge them against like their beliefs, you know, because then to us, like, you know, family is everything, you know, we have to respect like our elderly. And so I think that's why it's sort of a challenge to really like talk about and like bring up like this conversation. Yeah. But I definitely agree that we need to talk about it more.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I feel like their approval is also really important for me. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I think just like out of respect to my parents, like I want their approval on things. And I don't know if that's like a Chinese thing or like an Asian thing, but it definitely like confuses me sometimes when it's like something I want to do versus something they want me to do kind of thing. It's like very hard to navigate like what, like if I should feel guilty for wanting to do something that they don't want me to do. But I guess with talking about social justice, what does BIPOC solidarity mean to you all, and how do you practice it in your daily lives? I feel like it's such a deep question, and there's like no one way to do so. I'm kind of reflecting on my own, and I feel like it's really hard for me to do it when I'm out of college. Like, I feel like in college I was so active, so socially and politically active, and being out of that, and also like LMU, I don't know if you guys know, it's a very social justice oriented school, a lot of service, and so I feel like being out of that environment, it's been harder to keep myself, like hold myself accountable to doing so. But I think this podcast, like having this podcast, and I'm sure like you guys feel the same way, like having it helps me learn more about like the US, but also like Hong Kong issues that I never learned about growing up. And it definitely keeps me grounded in like taking action too. But yeah, it's like, it's hard. It's hard to do it.
Yeah, I think it is true that it's really hard to do it. Not only when you're out of college, I think it's also difficult when now like a lot of the things are online. But I feel like this is something that I should do more too. But I feel like because even when I was in college, I was very in my own bubble. Like I always hang out with other Asian Americans. I'm always with like the Chinese American group people. But like it's also on me to like step out of my comfort zone and really to learn about other communities. And it's also on me to like continue that after college. And I feel like a lot of times the easiest way to like introduce myself to like a new culture is through food or mm-hmm. just going or music. I think that can help me to like build that foundation to like develop an interest and also understand what it's like to be in that community. And I think with social media, I think now it's a lot easier to learn about different social justice issue and using my voice and like advocating for others, spreading the words is also how I practice solidarity.
Yeah, also echoing what you guys said about having this organization helps me a lot with staying up to date and keeping up with what's beyond my immediate community and what are my immediate needs. Because I also feel like I tend to gravitate towards other Asians. I don't know if that's necessarily because of a racial preference or because you just feel more comfortable and you feel like you are more able to relate with them. Especially during my time in Korea when I was studying abroad, I felt like I also did that a lot. But I also challenged myself to spend time with people who weren't Chinese or Asian and trying to learn about their culture and what they have to bring. And as always, if you're willing to give a listening ear, people will talk because people love talking about themselves generally for the listeners, but they're also sharing what means a lot to them. And something when it comes to BIPOC solidarity, a lot of it is undoing the beliefs that it doesn't happen or that it's not real or that it's just a facade. A lot of it comes from, you know, calling attention to what's the wrongdoings in your community, but also trying to make that step towards reaching out to other communities and showing up and dedicating your time to protests, petitions, all that stuff. That means a lot to other people.
Yeah, and like especially when you want to like show up and, you know, participate in like learning more about other communities in the other like subsections in the BIPOC community, it's also like holding yourself accountable and like urging yourself to like see things in different perspectives. Like for example, we had an episode on affirmative action, and I feel like when the episode first released, we really saw it through like our own lens as like Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. And then after we released the episode, we really took a step back, and then we were like, okay, so we were kind of very heated about like how like it would affect us, but now that we've like calmed down, let's record another episode adding on to why it might be a better idea for other members of the BIPOC community and why it might not be as bad, and let's talk about it from another angle. And I feel like especially with like different events that happen, it's important to urge like not just yourself but other members, but like other subsections of the BIPOC community to see it from your perspective and try to see it from like their perspective as well. And it's important to try to reach like a level of understanding instead of like trying to fight against each other, because it's really important to have unity, because like since we're both you know, minorities, it's important to understand and unite rather than pit each other against ourselves, so that we can strive to make more progress.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thank you for sharing all your thoughts with us. And like, you all are so well spoken. And yeah, and I can't believe you are just like college freshmen. Like, you guys are so like educated and like so knowledgeable already. So you're gonna do like so much in college. But yeah, thanks for being on and talking to us. Thanks for having us. We'll probably link your episode in our bio on Spotify and like Apple Podcasts. So go check them out. Voice to Culture. We did an episode on their podcast. And do you guys want to plug social media? Like, where can people find you?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for having us, first of all. And we really did enjoy talking to you guys for the past 30, 40 minutes or so. All of our handles are at Voice Culture, so very, very easy to find. So we have Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, LinkedIn, a bunch of stuff. Thank you.
Cool. Any last words? Parting words?
It was really, really fun talking to you guys. I think you guys are actually really, really well spoken. Oh my god. And I really like the points you guys came up with. And I really enjoy talking to you guys.
Oh,
you guys are like so welcoming. And like,
yeah, I felt like it was very like easy to you know, like kind of start a conversation and like go with the flow and like make comments about like the different questions that you had for us.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Well, this is it. This is it for this episode. Go follow them.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Bye.